Senior Focus.
Greetings, everyone. This is Anne-Marie Khoury. I'm your presenter for Senior Focus for this session. I have with me, not in the studio, but in a private home, the councillor for the Albany Ward area, Wayne Walker, who's now a long-term councillor, and an experienced councillor who understands the infrastructure and planning issues that we are on about. So today's session is a continuation of a series of programs about the Enabling Housing Act, the intensification of Auckland, what it's actually going to mean for people. And we've been teasing out some of the issues. We've looked at heritage, we've looked at infrastructure and planning issues, but today we're going to look at it from, you know, a practical street level. What's it going to be like for you in your street? And that's the discussion that we're having today. But before we kick off, I do wish to say that in the last week, today we want a livable environment in our city, in our future Auckland, and that's very much at risk. And when we talked about the livable city in 2010, we didn't actually envisage that we would have this kind of a debate on the table. I think there were all sorts of issues about well-being that we talked about in 2010. We were concerned that community connectivity wasn't strong enough, particularly in central Auckland. Community facilities were at risk. And now we're actually looking seriously at your sunlight is at risk, your distance from your neighbours, and whether you can hear your neighbours having an argument, whether you can have any privacy, whether you can have any safety in your driveway coming and going from your house. These are the really critical issues that are going to impact on people. As I drive around neighbourhoods in Auckland and I see some of the new developments going in a metre from the boundary and covering the whole site virtually, no trees, and I think, yeah, but this is going to be the norm. This isn't going to be the odd place. This is going to be the look of the new Auckland, and it just makes me shudder. So I'm going to introduce Wayne to you and say that, you know, he's a colleague, someone I've known over the years, and I appreciate his enthusiasm and willingness to take up the cudgels on this issue. So welcome, Wayne.
Welcome, Anne-Marie. Happy to be here.
Yep.
And certainly, I agree with all of the points that you've made. An increase in housing densification is going to be coming to the street near you for almost everyone in Auckland. There are some exceptions, some of the coastal settlements and the like, but for virtually all of Auckland, that is the case. There are two categories. There's the medium density housing, which is three stories, three houses on an average property everywhere, with no requirement for on-site parking. I'll repeat that, that's no requirement for on-site parking. And within building envelope, you could have multiple units. So it's not just about the number of homes, it's the number of people within these developments, and of course, people do all of the things that people do. They need to drink water, they need to enjoy the sewage system, they need to get around, they need to use public transport, they need to use amenities. And all of those things at a street level, and then as you go up above that, are going to come under huge stress. And I'm sure, as Anne-Marie has pointed out previously, there will be no requirement for a resource consent, which means that, on the face of it, there's no opportunity for council oversight. So if there is pressure, if there is something that is unworkable, how are we going to manage it? The short answer is we won't. And the council is not going to have any idea where this is happening. So this development can happen anywhere. It means that your local street may need to be ripped up because the piping system is not going to be of appropriate size. The road may need to be modified for one reason or another. I can see that there is going to be a huge increase in parking on the road, because if a developer wants to make the most money and they want to pack as many units into a development as possible, they can do that by having less parking because cars take up space. So this is going to put huge stress everywhere and a huge amount of cost that will arguably be in the many millions, if not billions of dollars. And where is that money going to come from? Because there is no provision in the Act to actually capture additional money to pay for this infrastructure. And then, of course, as Anne-Marie would have pointed out, in the walkable catchments, that is the areas around a number of transport nodes around Auckland, in the vicinity of rail, but also metro centres such as where we are now in the vicinity of Takapuna, you've got the prospect of six-storey high buildings, even more density and even more impact on all of the things I've just described. So this is the most important thing that is impacting on Auckland today.
Wow, what a brilliant analysis that was. A summary of what we've some of what we've talked about up till now, but you've put it in a nutshell, Wayne. Thank you. And I've been nodding and giving you some thumbs up from time to time because, you know, it's very concise and very direct and very on the button. The issue, I think, is how are people going to respond to this? How are people going to get their voices heard? Because this is such a sledgehammer coming from central government. It's not your local councillor that decided this. It's not the council that wants the council's unitary plan currently, and I know I've said this on a program before, but I think it's worth trotting it out again. 900,000 units can be built currently, given our current planning arrangement.
1 million.
1 million, okay. That's an update. But that would allow for a population increase of 2.7 million, which is, you know, reasonable, huge, more than enough people to try and accommodate into what is a narrow isthmus, a very long spread out city. It's difficult to plan for public transport, difficult to plan amenities around because it's a series of small villages. So we're not coping with the social structure, the well-being and the diversity very well at the moment, but allow for 2.7 more million people to come in and we're going to be bursting at the seams on any level, on any aspect of social and well-being measure. So that's something that hasn't been factored into any of the conversations that I've heard much. And that really does disturb me because we've got an ageing population. One in four Aucklanders will be over 65. That means they need more provision for access help, mobility help, walkability help, you know, because they're going to be aging, they're going to be experiencing some decline. And so they're going to live longer and they're going to have more complex needs. And that's got to be factored into everything. But it's not currently even on the table. Even though this Council has signed up to an age-friendly city policy that is directed by international standards of the UN. It may have signed up to that policy, but it's not on this table that we're discussing. It's not actually in view. So that is my concern as an advocate for seniors, that we will have a city that doesn't work for a big chunk of the citizens. And
I can pick up on it.
I think I'd like you to respond, Wayne.
So I agree with all of those comments that you've made, and I would suggest that all of the problems that you've identified around the need for older people, around mobility, around accessibility, around livability, around the social fabric of the community, I would suggest get worse through this legislation, and dramatically worse. If we consider that the thrust of this legislation is around going up, and within the building envelope that we're talking about that applies across all of Auckland, you're talking about 11 metres plus 1 metre for the roof. So you're talking about 12 metres. Now, within 12 metres, you can easily accommodate 3 stories and 4. But within this legislation, there is no additional provision for consideration of the needs of mobility, quite obviously the need for people coping with the situation where they may be living not on the ground floor but on an upper story. And how are they going to get on? How are they going to get on if they need access to a vehicle, which may not be their vehicle, but even somebody else's vehicle, a shared vehicle, and there is no provision for parking on that site? No provision for parking. Yes, I do understand that there will be some provision for mobility parking. So, as Anne-Marie has pointed out, it's simply not good enough. There's no additional provision for issues that go to sustainability. So if, like other cities, we recognise that we need to reduce emissions, and if we were in Australia and we're in a house such as we are now, there's a high likelihood that that house might well be powered by solar on the roof. How are we going to fit solar on the roof if an increasing number of roofs are shaded? No idea. So this planning is simply not future-proofed. What can you do? I can address it now if you like.
Well, I'd just like to respond. Okay. I'm wanting to respond to Wayne before we progress what to do about this. Although we have had this conversation before, but there's more to be had around it. Basically, what concerns me is with seniors and access, there's fire and emergency, there's how do you get the ambulance up a narrow driveway? How will the buses serve some of these developments? Because I know bus drivers have been asked to go out and assess, and they can't get some of the buses into some of these new developments.
Cul-de-sacs and so on.
And if the parking's going to be on the road on both sides, it's going to be impossible. So I think we've got some very practical issues about access that just are a nonsense when you start to, do any sort of investigation. I don't know why there hasn't been expert planning advice given to the government on this issue, because clearly no planners or architects and people from institutes that normally would advise as experts, none of them have been consulted. That says a lot, because that is part of why it's not workable, because their input hasn't been given.
Correct. Hasn't been tested.
So that's another strength to our bow in terms of concerns, because then we come across something called the Local Government Act. And in the Local Government Act, this current government has revised and put in the four well-being. And the four well-beings are supposed to be there to cover off the social and economic
and
environmental benefits to make sure that the city is future-proofed, livable, and it meets the needs of its citizens. Now, clearly, this development cuts right across that. So I'm interested to hear your comments on that, Wayne.
So again, I'm agreeing with everything you're saying, Anne-Marie. Yes, I would suggest that this Act doesn't meet the tests of the Local Government Act around the four well-beings. No question about that. I would suggest that there's been little, if any, testing. So where is the proof that any of this intensification actually works? What would it look like for your street? And I would suggest there'll be many streets and neighbourhoods that are absolutely worst-case scenarios. If I give you an example of an area where I live, which is up in Whangaparoa Peninsula is a very long, narrow peninsula. Yes, it's proposed to have a road called Penlink that will resolve some of the traffic congestion on the peninsula, but it will only solve that problem at the base of the peninsula. So the balance will become incredibly congested, overloaded in respect of our sewage plant that services the area, significant stormwater and flooding issues that already exist. Absolute worst case scenario. A couple of nights ago, I addressed a meeting at Herald Island, which is in the vicinity of Greenhithe and Hobsonville. A little tiny island, it gets a significant amount of medium density. As I mentioned earlier, this could go up to 12 metres. They don't have any effect of stormwater now. They don't have footpaths or cycleways. There's a very dangerous causeway that links Herald Island to Whenuapai. So it's not coping now. And yet, as soon as the plan change is notified by Auckland Council, which it is required to do by the government, it actually becomes operative. That means that this development can start happening in a very short space of time in your street to your neighbour or neighbours, and there's nothing that you can do. But yes, I'd suggest there are some things that you can do now. You just let me know when you want me to cover those off, Anne-Marie.
Thank you, Wayne. Yes, it's August is the time in which the council will pass the requirement for the changes to the planning rules. And so from August this year, the go button is pressed. And like a nuclear bomb goes off, you can't turn it back.
All that was just some years to come.
I think it's very, that may seem super dramatic, but the kinds of changes that we're going to face, the complexity of them and the roll-on effects will be felt for years to come. And the difficulty is that there's no guarantees of which developers are going to race to which site. So we got no real idea of where. It incentivises the worst. At the same time, the impacts on the lack of amenities, the lack of infrastructure and the lack of organised planning will mean pretty much that it's chaos. People will be able to voice concerns, but to what effect?
And if I can just add one of the outcomes to the mix. When you're selling a property and somebody is buying a property, generally the price or the value of the property is dependent on its development potential, what you can actually do with it. Now, in a situation where the development potential has gone up, what follows is, in many instances, the value of the property is going to go up. And that may well mean that an ordinary person is priced out of the market, because in many locations, it'll be the developer who intends to, as Anne-Marie has pointed out, probably develop that property to the max, which involves clearing it completely. All the trees will be gone. They'll have a flat building platform because they want to pour concrete so that they can build as close to the boundary and the like. Often that'll mean large retaining walls if it's sloping. So ordinary people are going to be priced out of the market. That includes first home buyers. It includes everyone. That is going to have a significant effect on people now and into the future. And that pricing effect has already started. Developers out there are getting ready now because they know that it's coming.
Yes. Apologies again for the quality in this program. There are gaps. Because we are recording on a cell phone and we're having to pass that phone back and forth. That's one of the limitations of living without a studio. Our studio was demolished a few weeks ago, and we are now looking at July as a moving in date to our new premises in Mount Albert in the shopping centre there. So you have to bear with us. If you get frustrated and you don't like the pauses and so on, I'm just pointing out we are doing our best. Now, I do say make comment most times because of this difficulty, and we don't have many options to get around it. But it's important to think about what wall-to-wall concrete looks like. What three stories with no sun on your place looks like. It's important to think about the impact of that concrete means the runoff into the stormwater is increased. And you multiply that across multiple sites, and suddenly the infrastructure issues become very real. I think the more we talk about what can't work, doesn't work, won't work, and looks a disaster, the more shuddering I do and the more fearful I am. And I'm not normally a fearful person. I'm very optimistic normally. So I'm looking for the silver lining, but I'm having a huge difficulty because I cannot see much amelioration in any direction from anywhere. And indeed, I like the fact that somewhere in the council paper, they talked about they have to be able to take account of the national level policy statements and policy frameworks that exist currently about well-being and environment and so on and so on. But I can't actually see the mechanism by which that's going to happen.
Being pulled through.
So I'm... You know, I'm very concerned. There is a better later life strategy, which is supposed to have as one of its principles that people, as they age, should be able to downsize and continue to live in their neighbourhood of choice, where their friends are, where they can relate to people. And this is well set out in that strategy. But this won't be possible. And there is also a hidden kind of thinking that goes on in the minds of many decision makers, and that is, oh, seniors can go to retirement villages. Well, in fact, these retirement villages usually on marginal land, land further out of the city with fewer amenities, and so people are quite isolated in that community. They relate to the people in their retirement village, but they can't always access a lot of things outside of it. But only 11% of seniors are in retirement villages.
And how are they going to be able to afford that?
And, well, we know that 50% of seniors are actually living only on the pension. So they aren't even in the ballpark. They're not going to be able to afford to move into these developments that the developers are doing. They're not going to be able to downsize. They're not going to be able to move into retirement villages. So they are going to leave Auckland because I can't see what else they can do. And that won't help them too much because this legislation is going to apply to all the cities around, all the major cities around the country. It will force them to go into small towns, towns of maybe 8,000 people. Maybe that will be good for connectivity, but there isn't the provision of suitable housing in these places.
Or services.
Or services, as Wayne points out. So the impact on seniors is going to be, it's going to put senior wellbeing right backwards. I mean, it's just going to be a disaster, and I can't see it in any other terms. And that is a very frightening prospect, because seniors have enough trouble sorting out often their own health issues and their own connectivity issues within their families and so on, without having to be advocates for their own well-being to the government or to the council. That's why people like myself exist and the program exists. So it does really worry me as to how we're going to grapple with this.
And I would suggest, Anne-Marie, that yes, it affects older people, but equally it affects younger people.
It's very disturbing, you know, because it cuts against our whole fabric of family and community. If we haven't got well-connected families and well-connected communities, then we are creating a society of very unhappy people, and that is very deeply disturbing. I cannot look out. Yeah, I cannot say anything except we need to get people speaking with one voice. We need to get people. This isn't about which party you vote for. This isn't about because all the parties up to now, voted, except that, have voted for this legislation. It's more about how much pressure you can bring to bear on your local MPs, and I think that's the place you start.
And again, I agree with you completely there, Anne-Marie. It is the government that has put this legislation in place, and equally, with the stroke of a pen, the government is capable of changing the legislation. So it's absolutely vital to be informed. Is write to an MP. And if you write to an MP, one of the most important things is to ask some questions, because if you ask some questions, they're legally obliged to answer. That forces the MP and their office to engage. So just ask them how the infrastructure is going to cope around the area where you live. Be specific. If you can organise a meet time with your local MP or another MP, frankly, because we need to be getting to all of them, is that by August, the information that I would hope that our council and other councils are presenting will show that simply from an infrastructure perspective alone, this will be unworkable and, more to the point, totally unaffordable.
And on that note, I have to say we must wind this up, but we will be back. There is more discussion to be had, especially about the three waters, I agree. And most of all, we need to see how people are getting on with writing to their MPs and what responses they're getting. And we need to bring this to the program. So thank you for listening, and keep listening, and keep telling your friends to go to planetaudio.org.nz and look up the program Senior Focus, and you can tune in to some of these programs that we have done around this issue. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.